Hey, Zero Block 30 listeners, you can find us every Tuesday and Friday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and YouTube. Prime members can also listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
Summer is all about the freedom to have fun. Forget a vacation and take a tequila-cation with new Truly Tequila Soda. This refreshing blend of real fruit juice from concentrate, sparkling water, and premium tequila blanco is the drink of the summer. Try all four refreshing flavors, all with 5% ABV and just 100 calories. Truly Tequila Soda. Keep it light. Hard Seltzer Beverage Company, Boston, Massachusetts. Please drink responsibly.
I am joined by
you sure?
Connor.
And who are you?
Joined by Riggs. This is Zero Block 30, presented by Barstool Sports. Let me just say this. I have traumatic brain injury. This is the worst week of my memory. I've gone through multiple combat concussions. I cannot think at this point because of this last week.
All right, so some context. We're recording this. Well, I'm good. We're recording this on Saturday.
Yep.
Me and Riggs had ourselves a little bit of a night last night. But more importantly, Chaps, you had yourself a whole damn week in Houston. So, I mean, just tell us, what was it like?
You know, at this point in my life, I'm 34 years old. And I'm so not the type of guy who goes out even once a month. Even when I go to New York, you guys know, like, I leave at like 11 or 12. Like, yeah. I'm not going to stay out till 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, like hanging out with my pals. Like, it's not something that I do. It's not even really something that I enjoy doing, like staying out like crazy late, mainly because my brain ends up like it is today. It's just fucking terrible. Every night this week, we were out, we were drinking, we were saying what's up to Stoolies. And that part was wonderful. When you're doing it in the moment, you have no regrets, right? I mean, like,
Absolutely.
You're going out last night when you're drinking, no regrets at all. This morning, however, I imagine is a different story. Well, you don't get really hangovers. And I wasn't hungover. It wasn't a hangover. It's every day I got progressively dumber.
Well, I mean, it looked that way just from all the social media, the videos. It looked to be a good time, though. I mean, was there anything during the week that kind of stuck out where you're like, wow, this is actually pretty cool that I'm getting the opportunity to do this?
I mean, that was the whole week. Just being around the Stoolies and how much, whenever there's that many in an area, because you get it, whenever, like, I'm up there in New York and stuff, people recognize you and they say they appreciate your work and they appreciate what you do, and that always feels great. But when there's hundreds and thousands of them in the same area and they are really stoked to be around, like, the Barstool employees, it's a really, really cool experience. Because the crazy part is, they, like, everybody feels like they know you, you know, like,
yep.
Because they read your stuff, they listen to your podcast, they kind of know your personality and how you act. So whenever they walk up to you at the bar, you're seeing their face for the very first time in your life, but they've seen yours thousands of times and they really enjoy hanging out. So that's probably the different part from both sides. But I loved hanging out with them, love drinking beer, have a new system in place because everybody knows I'm not a shot guy. Now when somebody asks me if they can buy me a shot, I say no, but I will take a flute of champagne.
Whoa.
Wow.
That is a classy move.
That was the first.
I was walking around with a little flute of champagne at most of the bars. It was very beautiful.
That was the first thing Big Cat taught me when I came on, was he said, when you meet Stoolies out of the bar, you have to learn right out of the gate, you have to say, I won't do shots.
Yeah.
And it's true, because it's the number one thing people want to do is, like, that's just when you're at a bar, that's the common.
Yeah,
buy a shot.
Yeah.
And it's really hard to say no. But then when they start doing it, even if somebody buys you a shot, even every 30 or 45 minutes, which doesn't sound like much,
they add up.
Over the course of 2 or 3 hours, you're fucking toast.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And Chaps, you hit on it. Like, it's weird. Like, you know, if we're out and we run into some Stoolies, it's awesome. But when everyone at the bar is there specifically for you guys, it's a whole
different
story.
Yeah.
It's just everybody wants to buy you shots.
You know, sales guy Jay always makes the connection that Barstool is kind of like a sports team for a lot of people, where they cheer for your successes and they weep for your failures, you know. It was very evident that people really, really like it, and that's what makes it fun. I mean, being in that environment and you could see how much people enjoy your work and people screaming your catchphrase, like, hey, Jazz, man, you having a good time? Well, it's hard to say. Like they're like saying the things that you say, hey, Chaps, that shirt is actually good. You know, like things that you say all the time and
also,
people are saying it to you.
Chaps, people love the way that you say bitch.
Yeah.
I've heard that people like the bitch. Yeah.
They like obsessed with it. They're like, nobody says bitch better than Chaps.
Yeah.
Well, I've had a lot of experience, my friends, because I tell you that's what I used to call all my junior Marines. That they're my bitches. So I you fucking bitch.
Is there anything is there anything you could tell us that, you know, nobody would have seen on social media that may have been funny or incriminating for any of our other colleagues or even for yourself, rather?
Not incriminating, but one of my favorite moments was whenever we brought on Pat McAfee at his press conference, and behind him was Big Cat, and Big Cat asks the question, is it going to be difficult going from one owner and boss who was a drug addict to another drug addict owner and boss? And Adam Vinatieri, the Colts kicker, was sitting right next to me whenever he asked that question. Adam Vinatieri, the dude who has kicked in 47 degrees with snow on the ground to win AFC championship game against the wind, who's won multiple Super Bowls based on his kicks alone, he got visibly shook at the question that Big Cat, because he just knows, like, when the question's there, Vinatieri, an active member of the Colts, watching a former member of the Colts retire, sees the drug addict question, and he just tenses up like, fuck. Like, you could just see it written all over his face. And he asked if his face could be blurred out, and we did in the video. But he was just like, man, like, after it was over, he's like, I'm going to get so many questions about that. Was I part of it? Did I know it was going to happen? Probably going to get like $1,000 fine.
What was the vibe like after the Pat McAfee news went, so I guess you would call it viral?
Yeah, I would
say
viral.
Picked up,
absolutely.
I feel like it was picked up and kind of delivered way more intensely and bigger than anybody even thought.
Yeah, it was, for sure. And that's one, I mean, you could feel it, like the social media thing, you could feel it. But one thing that, and this is a good segue into what we'll actually talk about on Zero Block 30. When we were down there and all together, because we were all working so hard and trying to create content like nonstop, I feel like this is the most out of the loop for the real world that I've been in a long, long time.
Oh, I could see
like,
that.
Like, I don't feel like I know a whole lot. Like, I was really trying to do a crash course this morning of catching up with current events and just looking at things that I didn't really get a chance to look into deeply at all. So I think it was a little bit different. We could tell, just because we were getting the salespeople and Erica were hitting up our email inbox, like, we've gotten 500 million impressions on Twitter with 20 million new users, like, reached. And so you knew that everything that was happening there, not just the McAfee signing, but just Barstool at the Super Bowl, was really a huge scene in sports media all across the board. And you could see Paul Papps was there, and we had, like, coaches, players, NFL guys showing up and wanting to hang out. And so you could just tell, like, this is a big week for Barstool. It was definitely a good time. Great day to be a part of the company, for
absolutely.
Sure.
Absolutely. Absolutely. What do you think of our new coworker, Pat McAfee, though? Did you get a chance to kind of chat with him at all and tell him who you are and what you're about?
Yeah, I mean, not much to get down into the nitty-gritty about, like, what we do here, but he was just really stoked to be a part of the team, and I think he's going to be a great addition. I mean, he basically cemented that he can't go back by openly taking Adderall on camera. So, I mean, like, I don't think he's going to go back. Now that if he did go back, he would get like a 4-game suspension right off the bat. So I don't see him taking back his word. But he's going to be awesome. He's going to be a different voice, and it's going to be good to have him. It's gonna, just for the interviews, because I think what he could end up being is like the funny guy, like our bro-y type of vibe, Deion Sanders. How Deion Sanders gets the really
sure.
cool interviews on his network. I think that could be what he does, because people are going to go on with Pat, like former players, active players, and have a good time because he's going to joke around. And you could kind of see that vibe with TJ Yates too. Like, TJ Yates entered the Barstool bus this week, and he's a free agent, but he was with the Dolphins last year. And when we first started asking him questions, he would answer in a very traditional media way, you know, like where it's very cookie cutter,
right?
And you know what a quarterback is going to say, like, before they even say it. Like, where do you want to play next year? Well, I want to play where anybody that's had me, where my talents can go, and I can go, shut the fuck up. Where do you want
to play? Give it to us straight.
I don't want to hear that shit.
Yeah.
And so he, like, started to loosen up, and I think that's what Pat's going to be able to bring out in a lot of players. But like I said, like, I have mush brain, man. Like, I can't think. I said 40 fucking states earlier. It's been,
yeah.
I've had 40 states since, like, 1875. And I don't even know if that's accurate, because they're throwing numbers out there.
Brains mush. You got the noodle.
For everyone listening, it took us a good 15 minutes before we even started recording to start recording just because we were fumbling around and everybody was just a big ball of mush. So appreciate your patience.
I had the ad reads up for next week. I had just stupid shit. Speaking of ads, Connor, did you want to tell us about anything? Like maybe like Thursday boots?
Yeah, Thursday boots, man. Let me tell you. I have two pairs now, and they are just unbelievable. And what makes them so unbelievable is boots typically, you know, you get them, and leather boots, they take, I don't know, 4 or 5 months to really break into where they're comfortable. Thursday boots, they come in the box, you put them on first time, boom, comfy cozy, super, super broken in already. I don't know how they do it. But it's impressive, and they look stylish.
I'm a big fan of boots, too. Good boots.
I've gotten compliments every time I've worn them. Chaps, you have a few pairs. You've gotten compliments as well.
There is no promo code, if that's what you're looking for.
Oh, yeah, there's no promo code, but all right, fine. Then go to Thursday Boots. Just go to ThursdayBoots.com, find yourself some cool boots, and we appreciate them sponsoring Zero Blog 30.
And what if they wanted to have some nice jeans? Do you have any jeans that you could suggest?
Absolutely. Absolutely. We got Mott and Bow. This episode of Zero Blog 30 is brought to you by Mott and Bow Jeans.
Nothing but professionalism, baby. We're knocking it out.
I love it. Get yourself some good jeans.
We are crushing it. No, what's cool about Mott and Bow is they're very affordable. Like, if you go to a department store, you know, Chaps knows, Riggs knows. Like, I enjoy clothes shopping.
You're a little bit of a fashion guy.
Yeah, you know, I try to be. You know, a lot of other guys here at Barstool get a lot of credit for being fashion guys, but I like to think I'm a fashion guy in my own right. But if you go to the mall and you try to buy some jeans, some quality jeans, you're looking at, like, $200. Mott and Bow jeans start at just $95, which is unbelievable and unheard of. And the other good thing about Mott and Bow is they have a really convenient try-on program. So if you're like, it's the winter, maybe you put on a little weight, maybe you're above what your normal waist size is, that's cool. You just order two pairs of jeans, two different sizes. Try them both on. Whichever one fits best, keep that. Send the other one back. And when you shop for Mott and Bow using the promo code CHAPS, you will get 20% off your first pair of Mott and Bow jeans. That is mottandbow.com, MOTTANDBOW.com. Get you some Mott and Bow jeans today.
There we go. That's ad time. So Mott and Bow, I need to say this before we move on. I got progressively fatter as the week went on.
Uh-oh.
Like, ridiculous. I told my wife, I have got to start back to the gym on Monday because I saw a picture of myself without my shirt on and it was unsatisfactory. I need to PT myself until I fucking die because I look ridiculous. But Mott and Bow, they have a little bit of stretch to them. So they have a little bit of elastic.
A little give.
Yeah. So they're a lot more forgiving than some of the other khakis and stuff that I was wearing, which did not have that gig. One of the big news events throughout the week was we lost a service member, a Navy SEAL, who was killed in a raid in Yemen. Riggs, you want to kind of walk us through what happened?
Yeah, it's pretty simple. There was a raid this week in Yemen, essentially going after Al-Qaeda. The main point of it was to acquire a bunch of intel from Al-Qaeda, cell phones, computers with all kinds of communication, all kinds of plans via Al-Qaeda. It's really notable for a couple reasons. One, you know, it was Trump's first real kind of life or death decision. And it's
the first real moment as commander in chief.
Yeah, the first time I feel like where you really sit down, it's like, hey, you know, you got to green light this thing. It's been worked on, important to note, been worked on and kind of compiled and planned for several months based on, you know, kind of different moons and different, you know, conditions like that. Obama wasn't able to green light it under his term. But it was planned. Much of it was planned under him. Ultimately greenlit by Trump during the raid. You know, Trump's calling it a successful raid. Other people are kind of hating on it, saying a bunch of stuff went wrong. We did also intentionally destroy a $75 million aircraft. But 14 Al-Qaeda terrorists were killed in the raid. The service member, Petty Officer, Navy SEAL William Ryan Owens was killed. That's the first, you know, U.S. military death under Trump's presidency. And there's also unconfirmed the exact number, but you know, maybe a dozen or so civilians were also killed So again, I think it's very notable for the fact that it's kind of Trump's first time, you know, just a week or so after he got into office, that he has to green light this thing. You know, he had a big dinner with Bannon and with all of his other people, and that's a whole other conversation of Bannon being kind of promoted in terms of the you know, national security team and all of that. But then there was the rolling out of the video, which happened in the last couple of days, where they, you know, the Pentagon posted a video kind of saying, hey, this is some of the intel that we got, and shows the successfulness, if you will, of the raid that was actually 10 years old and from something different. So, you know, I don't know if it's growing pains. I'm not sure what it is, but that was kind of the big news, the Yemen raid this week.
Yeah, so, I mean, a few things, but go ahead, Chaps. Why don't you start us off?
You got it.
Okay, I mean, just like, all right. So you said that the raid initially was started on Obama's watch, and Obama's administration said, we're not ready to act on this. We're going to push this through the next administration, which is fine. But my question is, why, if there wasn't enough intel, if they thought the scenario was murky, they didn't think it was the best time to conduct this raid, why were the senior leaders of the SEAL team and everyone else in that chain of command, why was it even brought to President Trump for him to make a decision on? I'm not excusing him for making the decision, but my question is, why was it even brought to him? Because it's not for Trump to know whether or not there's enough intel. He just gets the entire briefing, you know, at one time. So all those other people, they knew, like, all right, we don't have enough intel, or we think it's a bad scenario. Why would you even bring that to him to make a decision on?
Excellent point. And this, I was going to say the same exact thing. This falls, in my opinion, this falls fully on the shoulders of General Mattis and General Kelly, our secretaries now. I feel like that was their bust. And that is the danger of having someone who was a former general, a combat general on the ground, because the mitigating factors of what you normally look at, who knows if Mattis was doing it correctly. And it's very, very difficult at the same time. And I want to say, it's very difficult at the same time to Monday morning quarterback a combat mission where it's always murky on the ground.
Absolutely.
So whenever you look back and you have collateral damage, and collateral damage is such a fucking shitty term to use, that you have humans who did not deserve to die that died. Like, it's such a fucking euphemism that it's out of it. It's the worst euphemism that we use casually in American society, that we will say collateral damage. One of those children who was killed was an 8-year-old daughter of Anwar al-Awlaki. Awlaki is he's a very significant figure, because he was the first person under the reign on terror and the war on terror, maybe not the first person, the first person that I'm aware of who was killed extrajudiciously that was an American citizen. So he was there in Yemen. He was an American citizen, and they targeted him to have a drone strike without a trial, probably with the FISA warrant, I'm sure. But he had all that going, put a drone up his ass, killed him while he was an American citizen, because they stripped him of his citizenship before they did it. And that's a big case, man. Like, that, like the Al-Qaeda situation is a big, big fucking deal that they could do that. And that was under Obama's administration. I actually wrote a college paper on the situation, and I don't think that we should be able to do that under any circumstances, unless you go to trial. You remove his citizenship for treason, then you could target him. But they did it before. He was an American citizen who they made a decision to kill.
Yeah. And it just seems like right now there's so much competition still. And there shouldn't be. But there's so much competition and comparisons, Trump versus Obama. Okay, Obama, on his record, he got bin Laden. Okay, so my fear is that coming out the gate, Donnie was like, ooh, I want to get a big win under my belt. And that's why, you know, despite maybe bad intelligence or a crappy scenario, I think that it's possible that that is one of the reasons. His bravado and his ego led him to make that decision. So he could then, after...
I don't think so. This is weird. I'm going to defend Trump. I don't think so. He went to, from everything I read from the Washington Post, the New York Times, he went into the meeting hesitant about it. Mattis and Kelly talked him into it. He brought in his other advisors. They thought it was a good idea. Trump said, get everything together. Bring it back to me tomorrow morning. They try to talk him into it again, and then he eventually went. So everything that we said that Trump must do to be successful as commander-in-chief, he did those things in this mission.
Yeah, but you don't think if
I'm sure they told him that there was mitigating factors.
No, I
know. Yeah,
but I'm saying you don't think if it went like, you know, as well as a military mission can go, if there were no deaths on our side, you don't think he would have been banging the drum saying, "Hey, look what we just did."
Oh, he 100% would have.
Yeah, and I think that was somewhere in the back of his mind.
I'm sure it is, but at the same time,
but no, I agree with you.
They have to know. Kelly and Mattis have to know that.
Yeah,
they have to know that you're going to want to start off, especially with everything that's going on with the refugee situation and immigration and all that shit. You have to know that he wants a big win, and that would have been a big win. If they would have went and got all kinds of intel, it would have. The fact that no intel was there, that shit happens all the time.
Oh, yeah.
It happens all the time. The only reason why we're talking about it is because a SEAL died.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
That's the big... Even if you lose the plane, you have to get rid of the plane. Those fucking losses happen all the time. That's not a big deal. The loss of the money...
Yeah, we lost a plane when we went in to get Bin Laden. We lost an aircraft. So, I mean, yeah, you're right. That happens.
The fact that it was a SEAL that he had to go see,
yeah,
that's the reason why it came up, because we had Americans lost. Even if it was just the people from Yemen who were killed, I don't even think it's barely more than a blurb on the radar.
I agree.
Because there was an American death, that's why it's a big deal.
And I will give Trump credit, though, for attending the memorial service, he greeted the body when it returned to Dover. Was that
it?
Yeah, he went to Dover.
Yeah, he went to Dover.
He would have been shit on big time at the first combat death for our side if he wouldn't go. That would have been fucking shit show.
But I did like that.
It is problematic to me.
What?
That if that we all three know, and I just defended Trump, and that's not normally my role on the show.
No, very rare.
We all know that if that type of thing happened and the leak was that it was poorly thought out, poorly planned, and poorly operated, if that would have happened in the last administration, it'd be Benghazi part two.
Yeah. I mean, I think there's, you know, right now, and especially we're seeing it in these first few weeks of President Trump's administration, you know, we got a bunch of hammers out there. People are just looking for reasons to crush him. And if you're a hammer, you're going to find a nail. And any little snippet of news that people can grasp onto and turn into a big cause, it seems like they are doing that left and right.
Well, here's the thing that I want to say, too, that I think concerns me is that it's being deemed the whole raid as a huge failure, right? And and so what makes me nervous is what if they did make the right decision based on everything they had?
Sure.
And if this type of thing would have happened 2, 3, 4 years into his administration, it would just be one of dozens, and he still made the right call. Now I'm worried that it's going to, I don't want to say gun shy or something like that, but that it's going to really make them nervous
or make them
go, oh, shit, or make them question themselves when there's, what if they did? What if they were right? What if they had, based on the intelligence they had, the information that they had, the advising that he was getting from his top guys, he made the right call, and you just don't know, and it makes it really tricky. And I think it really sucks that it's so early on his administration that it's coming off as
that's the nature of the presidency. Yeah. We see that with in the war in Iraq. Whenever what the fuck was George Bush supposed to do? Whenever Colin Powell, Condi, the intelligence community as a whole are saying there is 100% weapons of mass destruction inside Iraq.
Yeah, and that's such a black eye on him.
He's the one that gets the – but that's what he's supposed to do. He's supposed to – if they would have said there is, and he was like, nah, you know what? I don't think there is.
Right.
Like, yeah.
He would look like a fucking idiot if a weapon went off.
Yeah.
So when you're in the position of being the top dog and you can't be eyes and ears on the ground, you have to – get the right advisors, and we all would have thought, and we all were very bold about saying that Mattis was a great person to be there. Kelly was a great person to be in a room. Even those guys, even though they were great in the room, in this circumstance, you have to hold their feet to the fire and say, you fucked up.
Yeah, no, they did.
Because the outcome wasn't good. Even if the intel was good, the intel was one slice of the pie. The intel is one slice of the pie. As the Secretary of Defense and as the national security advisors, it's those guys' job to ensure that the people below them have all the intelligence absolutely needed, and more importantly, that the operation is carried out to the way that it should be. And that did not happen. So when that doesn't happen, it falls on the highest part of that advisor group, and in this case, Secretary of Defense Mattis and National Security Council, or National Security Advisor Flynn were the ones who fucked it up.
Yeah. And I mean, it's what's crazy too is that, you know, Trump has to make the decision, and he could have had all the most, it could have been told to him that this is the most perfect raid and it's completely planned out and we have all the best intel. And it's like the old Mike Tyson saying, everyone's got a plan until you're punched in the mouth. You could have everything perfectly planned and then you're actually executing the mission and everything can go to shit. And, you know, obviously that's going to land on Mattis, on Kelly, and Flynn, and then ultimately on Trump. He's getting crushed for it, but it's just, it's such a tough, tough position to be in, because no matter what, no matter how well it's planned or what intel you have, something could always still go wrong.
And there's always inherent risk when you have military operations, especially those that are covert. So yep. People that haven't really put two together while they're using lumens as a deciding factor and why President Obama said no, the moon cycle didn't hit right. That means whenever you go under the cover of darkness, if you're a special operator and you go under the cover of darkness, mm-hmm. you want darkness to be actually dark. The darker you can have, the better. And I've been in the situation where you don't have complete cover of darkness. And when you're in a place like Yemen, or you're in a place like Fallujah, you're in a place like Baghdad, and they don't have the type of pollution that we do mm-hmm. here, the stars are much more bright. So even on a night where the moon's not out, you could still kind of see at night. If the moon is out, you can see nearly as well as you can in daytime for a while, yeah. up to like 150 meters, 200 meters. You could see pretty fucking well.
It's unbelievable.
So when you're remote Yemen, you can see. You can really see. It's not night like it is in New York or whenever you're in like a big town in America. The stars aren't covered. You can see a lot of shit.
Yeah, there's no ambient light out there. It's crazy. And I will say, you know, a little behind the scenes here, like anytime you're going on a mission, whether you're special operator or just, you know, what I was doing or anybody, part of the mission brief is the amount of illume that you're going to have if you're operating right. at night.
That's one of the most important things to know, because yeah. you know exactly how restrictive you could be in your movements.
Absolutely.
How long you need to stay behind a building, how the angles of the moon and things like that. It's very, very important.
Yeah, and I think that it's, you know, I'll play devil's advocate a little bit and say that, you know, it almost, I think there's an argument to be made that it kind of protects Trump's team's decision a little bit, in that there probably is some very real truth to the fact that maybe the Obama team had everything ready. They were ready to greenlight it. But like you said, if those types of conditions aren't right, if it's too bright, they literally cannot do it. So there's a good chance, or at least a realistic chance, that they were like, yeah, we're definitely ready to do this, but we got to wait 2 weeks or whatever the hell mm-hmm. it is. And so when all those things factor in, it's tough. I know the media is ready to jump all over him for anything yeah. that goes wrong and all of that. So again, it's shitty. Anytime, you know, we lose one of ours, it's shitty. And so it's, again, I hope it doesn't negatively affect, you know, our top dog's ability to make decisions and get shit done the right way, but it's not an ideal start.
Yeah, it's human nature. It's going to be in the back of their mind, but I think they have to trust their judgment, trust their experience, and continue to forge ahead.
And I was going to say, too, that, you know, it speaks to how tricky and how treacherous the whole job and those types of decisions are, because for the several weeks leading up to it, when we talked about cabinet appointments and all that, we said many times, you know, well, we really hope Trump leans on some of these great guys in the categories that he might not be an experienced, expert in, mm-hmm. like national security or military or things like that. And then in this type of situation where he does, and he didn't necessarily, it didn't work out. And it's kind of like, well, shit, maybe, you know. So it just speaks, I think, to how fucking tough it is and how tough those calls are and how, you know, pressure-packed that job is.
Mm-hmm.
And it also goes, and this is like a really kind of uncomfortable thing to talk about, but Marine generals, by and large, Marine leaders aren't concerned about, I mean, not to say they aren't concerned, the loss of life by the service member is not the primary concern of the Marine leader, the general, and probably Army as well. We have a mantra that's weapon, gear, body. The first thing that matters to the Marines, to the armed forces, is mission accomplishment, then troop welfare, and not before. So Mattis and Kelly obviously made the decision that the intel that they thought they were going to get based on this raid was more important than the possible loss of life. And that's the way that every single mission goes. You do not go after somebody if you don't think that if everyone dies that's going, then the mission is no longer worth it. And that's the way they looked at it. Like, they looked at it, if we get this intel, if we have loss of life, it will be worth it. And that's a weird thing to think about as a civilian now. Like, you're sending in people for information that's on a cell phone or a laptop, and I don't know what that information could have been. You guys don't know what it could have been either. Mm-mm. No one knows what that information could have been unless they're inside, like, the intelligence services. So saying that they were willing to risk those SEALs' life to go get it shows the mindset of that level of leader for the military, that we want mission accomplishment and then troop welfare.
Yeah, and I mean, it's one of those things. Unless you're in that position, you get to that level, you'll never know what that feeling is like. I can't really fathom thinking at that level, obviously, because I never got to that level. So it's just, it's a very, very difficult.
Yeah, but there's elements of that in smaller levels of leadership, too. Like, even thinking back to when we saw in Save It Private Ryan, where he tells him to run the hill. The officer there, the captain there, knows that the loss of life by that gentleman that's rushing the bunker, the machine gun nest, is absolutely possible. The life, but the mission of him getting the guy out of the machine gun nest is worth the risk of his life.
Yeah, no, I agree. I just don't think it's on the same scale.
It's definitely not on the same scale, yeah. but there's elements to that. There's,
no,
I'm
I
sure
agree.
That there was that time in Iraq for you that you had to issue orders or give instructions where you know that the result could be one of your guys dies.
No, absolutely.
Your job is to accomplish the mission.
No, you're right. Yeah, you get that mission. It comes down from the battalion commander. You say, all right, Roger, sir, we got to execute. So, yeah, it's tough. It's just part. It's the nature of the work.
Yeah, and I think that's a really very, very unique concept for the majority of our listeners that are like me, that are not military people, that are just civilians and always have been. Because when something like this happens, right, the headline is always, you know, we lost a Navy SEAL.
Mm-hmm.
And in reality, the tagline, you know, to the people involved is, could very realistically be successful mission. Mm-hmm. Yes, we lost life, but that's, like you said, that's not primary. That's
and part
even
of
if
it. They that's went and they got all kinds of information, they're not going to tell us right now what the information they gleaned from it was. And I'm not protecting it at all. I don't know if the mission was good or if the mission was bad, but I'm just saying that's part of it. I mean, loss of life for the American troop that goes into a combat action and does a combat raid that signs up to be a Navy SEAL knows exactly what the risk is. We just hope as the American society is that we take every single mitigating factor that we can, gather every piece of intelligence, and don't go until you have a high probability of success. And it seems like that they thought that they did, but they were wrong. And the fact that they were wrong is troubling.
Yeah. And I mean, it'd be just by the nature of the fact that it was a clandestine operation, we're never going to know, I don't think, if it was successful or not. So
we still don't even know it was in a lot of Bin Laden's papers. Are we like?
Absolutely. No, absolutely. So, you know, the only thing we're taking from this mission is that someone died. So that's,
yeah, I mean, they're
that's
not
how
be,
we're not, we can't swallow it.
They're not going to be coming out.
They
being
just
like,
released parts of the 9/11 report. It's fucking 16 years later.
Yeah.
Right. They're not going to be coming out. Yeah, we got this cell phone. We got these texts. This is what they're saying. Like, no, you're going to keep that stuff. If anything, you want to portray it the other way. Yeah, we didn't get shit.
Yeah.
Keep doing what you're doing. We got all your, you know, so it's tough.
Definitely a tough situation. And hopefully those things don't pop out. And I don't want to make it sound like we're minimizing the death of a Navy SEAL at all. Like, he's our badass of the week for giving his life for a service of the country. Because one thing that we have to make absolutely clear is that no matter how much the people who are giving the orders fuck up, the guys on the ground are doing their fucking jobs. Like, they're doing what they were told to do, what they were trained to do. And that SEAL giving his life is the most gallant thing you can do for your country. And so we appreciate him. And if his family is somehow listening, we thank you for the sacrifices that you're making, the emotional how crushing it is for Gold Star families whenever they lose one of their people. And that just doesn't go away. That sting will never go away. So it sucks to lose people, but
maybe part of it. Maybe now's a good time to just go right into Badass of the Week and talk about him a little bit. A true professional and a wonderful husband. He even had, I was researching him, he had a relationship with Buster Posey, the catcher for the San Francisco Giants, who said Ryan Owens was a hero that has gone way too soon. He enlisted in the Navy right after high school. His buddies said that was like all he talked about. He knew from the beginning in high school all he wanted to do was be a Navy SEAL. He wasn't the biggest guy, but he was just devoted to getting bigger, faster, stronger so he could be a Navy SEAL. And as one buddy said, he always talked about the greatest thing he could do was serve his country. So, I mean, that just speaks to what a great guy he was, that he knew at such a young age that he wanted to do that. all his buddies said, you know, he played football and baseball. He said that he was a great teammate. He was a very funny guy. He received 2 bronze stars with the V device for valor through his many combat deployments.
Those that are listening, remember the bronze star with the V, the type of story that comes along with those, that's the same type of story that Alejandro Villanueva told. Yep. So he had not just one, but two stories just like that.
General Mattis referred to him as a selfless warrior. And I'll leave you with this comment from Rear Admiral Tim Szymanski. Excuse me if I'm mispronouncing his name. He's the commander of the SEALs. Owens was an exceptional SEAL, an experienced warrior, and a highly respected teammate who served silently, nobly, and bravely through several combat deployments. Ryan's legacy strengthens our own resolve and commitment to this crucial fight. So, Badass of the Week, Chief Petty Officer William Ryan Owens, who paid the ultimate sacrifice, and we will be forever grateful for that.
Yeah, man. And it's always a rough spot to kind of transition after that, and we'll just do it as cheesily as possible. So, Riggs, can you tell us about some really fancy socks?
Yeah, Badass of the Week this week was brought to you
smooth transition.
Oh, yeah, super smooth, by Espresso Box. Those of you that don't know, I am a Harvard guy. I'm not classy, but people always think I'm classy because of that. If you want to appear classy, Espresso Box is absolutely phenomenal. If you wear dress socks, if you work in a corporate environment, this is clearly the subscription box for you. You can fool people, or if you are classy, then even better. Every month, they'll send you 5 to 6 stylish products. They're guaranteed to retail for over $100. Your cost, just $25. Fantastic savings. They typically include products, ties, wallets, sunglasses, watches. Again, Connor, this is right up your alley.
Yeah.
You will love all that stuff. Connor rocks it phenomenally. Again, you can really convince people you're a classy guy, you're a good-looking guy,
completely
you're
formed,
a fashionable guy. Just $25, you're going to get retail for over $100. Phenomenal deal. Everything is yours. Just you keep shipping is free. You get a personal stylist as well that'll tailor your stuff for you. So, again, it's just $25, not ducks. Phenomenal savings. If you're ready to jump on a great deal, go to SprezzaBox.com. That's SprezzaBox.com. You're going to get 20% off your first month's box with discount code CHAPS. That's CHAPS discount code, SprezzaBox.com. Class yourself up.
Something just occurred to me. If you listen to Zero Blog 30, you're going to have a great night's sleep. You're going to wake up, and you're going to make yourself an amazing breakfast with Blue Apron. And then you're going to get dressed, and you're going to look phenomenal between 5'4", Mott and Bow, movement. You're going to go to work, and you're going to get all these compliments on how you look.
You're going to be rocking Espresso Box at work. I mean, yeah, we really make you a better person.
Yeah, who would have thought the podcast about the dirtiest dudes in the world are going to have you looking really handsome.
And then to top it off, you're going to come home looking really, really handsome for your wife or husband, and you're going to have a handful of gorgeous flowers to hand them. So, I mean, yeah, I think we're doing good things.
Away from your wife and husband, recently, the Marine Corps grunt units are saying that they are going to transition in the field to having males and females live in the same tents, use the same bathrooms. Everything is going to be exactly the same, whether you are female or male when you're in the field. Now, when they're in the barracks, they're going to have separate bathrooms and stuff like that. But when you're in the field, you're in the field. And I fucking love the decision. I think that you have to look at it that if you are a grunt, you are a fucking grunt. Well, there's no special thing. They don't have 2 fucking tents. Everybody sleeps basically nut to butt. And it is what it is. And they're not going to have any different standards for women. There's not going to be anything. So I don't know how you could possibly be a hater on women in the grunts or anything like that if legitimately there is absolutely no concessions made. Everything's the same. It's a volunteer job. If you don't like it, you can get the fuck out of it and do a different job in the Marine Corps and write out your time and re-enlist and do everything. But if you want to be a grunt, these are the rules, and they are without qualification.
Yeah, we said this a couple episodes ago where we talked about women in the military in general, and we basically all agreed that bottom line is, if you're a woman, if you're a man, I don't care if you're a fucking alien, I don't really care what you are. Nobody cares what you are. If you can do the requirements to be in, you're in. Yeah. Who gives a fuck?
Yeah, and I think it's one of those scenarios where you'll eventually being in the same tent, men and women, they'll just get so comfortable being in the same unit that just nothing will faze them. Whether, you know, they're changing in front of one another or they're showering in front of one another. Like, it's just, I don't know. I just see it as one of those things where you'll become comfortable and it'll become the norm. I mean, I'm not saying it's going to become a free-for-all, like, orgy or anything, by no means.
People aren't going to be fucking it. I mean, I'm sure people, fucking combat zones all the time.
Yeah,
I know
absolutely.
Several people who came back pregnant and shit and got, like, and several different dudes that would come back with, like, STDs and shit. Like, that stuff happens.
Listen,
yeah, that's not going to happen.
That's what people do. People fuck.
Listen, when you're roaming the streets of Iraq and on a patrol and you see a little kid come up to you and that little kid has very fair hair and light skin, well, you know, something tells you that somebody was doing something.
I didn't know where that was going.
Oh yeah, well, no, I'm just saying that, you know, we call them war babies.
Yeah, lots of those.
That happens.
But that's a tradition as America is long.
And I mean, that's also because of, you know, there's other countries that we serve with while deployed, you know, the Brits.
Who's your favorite? Who's your favorite country to serve with?
Probably the Aussies.
Nope, wrong answer.
Okay, what's the right answer?
The Italians.
Why the Italians?
Because they get legit good wine in their MREs.
Ooh, I did not know that. Or maybe I did know that.
How much?
So if they have like pasta or whatever, they'll have a full body red right there.
That's unbelievable.
A little juice box of wine.
And that's something that's different from our country. We're probably the only country now that
we
doesn't
prohibit alcohol.
Yeah, that prohibits alcohol while you're deployed. Where other countries, they still allow it.
Don't tread on me, baby. Don't tread on me. Let me have those fucking beers. And that's what the issue is. Like, if you are, because you know when you're going to go out, let the dudes have like one or two beers. Just have the same thing. You can't be drunk off duty.
Yeah. Still treat you like a professional. But then I just think it becomes, it's a snowball effect. I think you one or two, and then, oh, hey, Riggsy, let me get your one or two beers. And then next thing you know, Chapsy's had 16 beers, and he's hungover for the mission tomorrow, and he's got mush brain. And I can't rely on them.
That sounds like the Barstool way, right there.
Yeah, that's the Barstool.
Pretty much all we
how
do.
We operate.
Yeah, we'll just
I don't
have
know
one.
That that's yeah. I don't know that that's the best for combat.
That was one of my favorite nights in Iraq. Was whenever I had gotten shot and I got back from the hospital and I just fucking downed a bunch of bourbon, was rolling through, and a Master Guns was like, "Hey, what are you doing?" I was like, "I'm walking because I'm an American." Like, it was just like ready to like go at him too. But, I mean, drinking in a combat zone happens all the time. You just have to do it illegally.
Yeah.
So just, like, if you let people have a beer or two, and because as much as you work, as much as you're dehydrated and shit like that, a beer or two, you'll feel fine, but you'll wake up good in the morning.
Yeah, and there's also, I mean, there's really no better way to really get to know people than you just go out for a night drinking.
That's sad. You're absolutely right.
You know,
find out if you really like someone.
If you came back after like a few days of like doing like crazy amounts of wrecking and humping and shit like that, and then you just get to crack a few beers, that makes everything better, man.
It's
like,
great.
It just does. I look forward to like a cold water. Like if I came back and in my little area for dog handlers and shit, if I went to the fridge and could just pull out two, even if they were the lightest abuse, if it was like Shiner Light or Shiner Blonde, which is only like 0.32 alcohol or 3.2 alcohol percentage, that would have made my day. But I go in there and have to get non-alcoholic. I'm like, this is bullshit. Where the difference is really negligible.
There's also nothing better than a beer or kind of any alcoholic beverage than one that you've earned.
Oh, yeah. That's a great point.
Like whether it's Friday after work or whether, you know, I'm a big skier. Whether you go ski all day and you come off the mountain at 2 or 3, it's not the same thing as when you just get up and you're a lazy fuck on a Saturday or Sunday and you drink beers, you didn't really earn it.
Yeah.
When you really earned one, oh, it's fucking delicious.
It tastes
delicious.
Good. When it hits your lips.
And you know, you're like, you know what, Riggsy? You deserve this beer, buddy.
That's the part I hate the most.
That's,
it gets me every time that I watch Forrest Gump, you know, because when Forrest and Bubba first roll up to the combat zone.
Yeah.
And everybody's, like, crushing keg stands. They're, like, hitting beers. Everybody's ripping cigs. Like, they got cigars and shit. I'm like, what the fuck, man?
Yeah, I missed out.
Like, when did being a warrior become such pussified that you can't even do that?
Yeah, that is bullshit.
That would have been awesome, man. Like, it would have been so dope to pull back into Fallujah after a long mission, take your shirt off, crush some beers, smoke some cigars with your homies, and just hanging out.
I'll be honest, I didn't even know that. I didn't know that was that you couldn't do that.
Yeah, no, there's no booze allowed. I think I might have told the story on here.
You got to go like off base?
Maybe you can get it. It really depends on where you are. It depends if you're serving with any other countries because they have access to it. I might have
told
this story.
How much do you think of that is our rules and how much do you think is cultural? That we're respecting the culture of Iraq? Because I know they're not big drinkers.
Quite honestly, I think it's just the rules of our military. I don't know that we would really care as much. Because we would be doing drinking. We'd be drinking on our own bases. And there's not really any Iraqis or too many that are on there. So I don't think it's so much cultural. But the Super Bowl, when I was deployed, it was the Steelers and Cardinals, which I'm still kind of bummed out. The Cardinals didn't win that game. I thought they were going to pull it out and get another one for Kurt Warner. But anyway, we had, I don't know why it came down, but it came down that we were allowed to have two actual beers, and they shipped beer out to my combat outpost. So everyone was allowed two beers. I didn't take mine because I was like, what the hell am I going to do with two beers? So I gave them to my buddy Rob. And again, Rob ended up with like 12 beers. So Rob had a great night.
Rob had a fucking great time.
But we do not have alcohol while deployed. Or you're not supposed to, at least.
I didn't know that.
So going back to what we talked about at the beginning of the show, whenever I said that I was in Houston all week and everything, I had a pretty fucking surreal moment on Tuesday night when we were there. I looked at my watch and I saw the date. And I was like, motherfucker, 10 years ago today, my plane landed in Iraq. And now I'm at the Super Bowl with Barstool. I was like, what a fucking difference a decade made.
Wow.
And it was just like kind of how we go back to talking about how it seems like you have multiple lives. Like we talked about with Villanueva. It was a big time two lives moment. Where I was just like, fuck, man, I'm pretty damn fortunate.
That's awesome.
I think everything that I did and everything that my unit did, and then to be here now, it's kind of remarkable.
It's incredible because I think, just to kind of think back a couple weeks ago when I think Roan tweeted something along the lines of, it's just crazy to think that I work for Barstool because I would have done anything for this job. And I think that that's very relevant here because I think all three of us were huge Barstool fans.
Yeah.
Before. And now the fact that we're able to come here, the fact that, you know, you guys started this show where all of a sudden we're able to talk about these things that Barstool never fucking talked about before in a really cool, relatable way, and you guys have the military perspective, it's wild. And that's crazy that I'm sure that moment was wild.
Did you share that moment with anybody? Did you tell anybody?
Yeah, I did. I told Erica and I told Roan, and Roan was like, yeah, man, I just can't believe like 6 months ago I was cutting roast beef and now I'm here.
It's crazy. Yeah.
What?
New perspectives on new things in the Barstool Network. Young Rigsy has started a podcast called Foreplay with his partner, Trent. And we are going to have Trent on next week. And we are going to challenge all of our listeners who are military listeners. Think about and share pictures with me and Connor and Riggs on Twitter, email, Facebook, wherever. Share pictures of your favorite golf courses that you went to around the world. We want to see all the different ones. I'm going to talk about the ones that I've seen in like Okinawa, Japan. They had a lot of badass ones. Riggs is going to come on. Trent's going to come on. They're going to do a little talking golf.
How's yeah.
You enjoying it so far? You enjoying your golf show?
Real, you know, Trent and I are just gigantic golf fans. We love everything in the game. I've played around before with Connor here. And this whole little kind of teaser with the military, golf, on military bases or in places where, you know, military folks are stationed. I'm really excited for that because you always see that. There's always, like, some sort of golf. It's always, like, a little hobby for whatever reason for people that are stationed out to get out. And there's also David Faraday, who's a huge personality in golf, is a big military guy. And whenever he goes and visits the troops, which he does all the time, shout out to him. He's the man. He's also coming to the office, I believe, in about a month. And he always plays golf and does military or at least goes and checks out kind of the local course and whatnot with the local military folks. So the podcast is going great. Trent and I are huge, like I said, golf fans. We've been trying to get this off the ground for a while. Once he moved to New York, it became very real. So, yeah, we're going to have him on. We're going to talk a little kind of golf military combo intertwined a little bit and all that. So I'm excited.
Awesome. Awesome.
I'm looking forward to it. And that being said, if you're a stoolie who is listening or you're not a stoolie, you wouldn't consider yourself a stoolie, you just like this podcast, and you're active duty, and you are on a military base somewhere close, hit us up. We will go golfing with you.
That would be awesome. That'd be
so
really
cool. So we can go. If you're like a general or something, hit me up for real. We'll do something. Come on the show.
Yeah, we're going to try to. I know Smitty's been doing it for a while, having an event every year, but we're going to try to set something up this spring or summer. Barstool related, and I think too, if we could get a good amount of military folks and all that,
yeah, maybe we can, you
like
know,
a co-event,
yeah, co-event, maybe I don't know, raise some money for some nice causes. I think that'd be great.
I'm sure. Well, I know Zero Block 30. It actually got approved, so I'll tell you what we're gonna do a little bit of Memorial Day. Make a little trip down to DC, and we're gonna do some really cool storytelling for you guys, for the listeners, and it's gonna be mostly in a video format. But that would be a good place because we could go hit up the, I think it's Mead that's right there, right?
Yeah,
that's
yeah,
right
yeah,
outside
Mead,
DC.
Yeah.
So we could do Mead, we could do Andrews, we could do Quantico. And if there's some Navy shithole someplace around, I guess like Norfolk would be the closest thing that I guess we'll do Navy too. But hit us up if you want to golf when we're doing that, because that could easily be a 4-day thing. Well, I got to go pick up a 70 inch TV.
Wow, rough life.
Whoa.
Rough life for this guy.
70?
I'm going with the 70. I was at Costco earlier today, and I got it. And then I tried it. I was like, sure, it's going to be big enough to fit in my wife's minivan. It was off by like an inch.
Oh, that sucks. That sucks.
So I got to drive my truck back across town to fucking go get it after I have mush brain and I just want to sit on my couch. Or I've already taken one bath today. I want to do two baths today.
Wow, it's a two-bath day. What a day. What a week. I'll tell you, though, man. I'll tell you what. From the sands of Iraq to Barstool in Houston. I tweeted it out the first night we had our show on Comedy Central. I found out about Barstool 9 years ago. I was sitting in a tent. I had a really shitty day, and I found Barstool, and now here we are. So that's pretty cool. So to go from Iraq to here, it's pretty surreal, pretty awesome, though.
Very much so. Well, thanks, fellas. We will hit you back next week. Hopefully my brain works better, and we'll have even better points because I'm not sure if I made anything. And I will say this as a legal thing. This is legal. Can somebody verify?
Okay, what?
All right, nothing I said today can I be held accountable for because I don't even know what I talked about for the last hour.
Yeah, no, that's so, that holds
that
up.
Checks out.
That holds
checks
up.
Out. Yeah.
No
yeah.
problem.
So
you're good.
Anything I'm saying as a disclaimer right now, don't come fucking tweet me and say that I was wrong about this because this episode didn't even happen.
Yeah.
You just wasted an hour of your life because I don't even know what the fuck I was talking about.
Please don't tweet me that I don't know how to read. I swear I know how to read.
Yeah, none of that counts today. Yeah. So any of your tweets, they don't exist. Shitting on us for anything we said, just that's not real. So you can go fuck yourself.